This is the Eurosnob Podcast.
All right, we'd like to welcome everybody into another episode of the Eurosnob Podcast. You may not remember who we are because it has been, by my records, about 4 months. And I think we all have some pretty good excuses for that. But in case you forgot, I'm Ian. I'm joined by Alex, and I'm joined by Bill. Alex, man, welcome back.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been a little while. I didn't actually know how long it had been until you mentioned it, but yeah, we've all been super busy with kids on the way, getting married, buying houses. So I think all of us have pretty good excuses to not have been on for a while, but certainly good to be back on. And I know we got a lot to catch up on. And Bill, how are things going on your end?
Things are going well. It's great to be back. We are all very busy people as we all follow each other socially. And, you know, we're all doing some good things and advancing ourselves. And it's been taking away from talking about Arsenal for a bit. But this season, I don't think that's been necessarily a bad thing. So we could try to end with something good here, I hope.
Right. And I think you put that right there, man. It's been one of those seasons, again, really, where it's hard to find the motivation to talk about the same results over and over again. But you know, we had some pretty big news just a couple of days ago that I don't think any of us were really expecting. I mean, I know I wasn't expecting to hear news coming out like that. Obviously, that news is Arsene Wenger has announced that he's going to be stepping down at the end of the season. First reactions, Bill. Where did what were your first thoughts when you saw that?
I was really in shock. I was laying in bed. My kid was just fed, fell back asleep. I decided to look on my phone before catching some Z's that were well deserved. I saw Arsenal.com posted Merci, Arsene, and I was like, what is this about? Is he going on a vacation? Is he having a surgery? And to read the statement by him, I know we talked earlier in the year that he may possibly leave at the end of the year, that we were kind of guessing, and then we kind of went back and thought he would do the 2 years. I was actually in shock. I really thought the whole honor your contract statement was going to be legit. So I was baffled to see him actually come out and produce a statement like that. How about you, AJ?
Yeah, it was interesting. I woke up like 5:30 for some reason, because that's my life now. I can wake up before my alarm, and my first reaction is always to go on Twitter and check my phone, which is really bad if you want to go back to sleep, by the way. So the first tweet I see is Orenstein saying, you know, breaking, Arsene Wenger steps down, and I for some reason I thought I might have been like just groggy, so I had to like do a double take and think, is that say what I think it says? First of all, I have my notification set to Orenstein tweets more than anything, because that's what I need to see first. But then I started reading, and obviously the timeline just blew up with people talking about it. And kind of like what you were saying, Bill, I mean, I was in shock. It was a little surreal. You know, to the extent that I thought this might happen as the season has gone on. But then when you actually see it, and you see the statement from the club and from Arsene Wenger, it was, yeah, I would say surreal, honestly. I don't know. What about you, Ian?
It was one of those reactions, and kind of it's about the same time you were talking, 5:36 o'clock. My alarm had just gone off, or it was about to go off, and of course I wake up before my alarm goes off. And I didn't see Ornstein's tweet right away because I turned his notifications off after the transfer window because he started tweeting about non-Arsenal stuff. And was, you know what? You know, you're useless to me for now. So I had to actually turn the notifications off. So I didn't see his tweet. I just saw a bunch of cryptic, I can't believe this is actually happening. You know, they said the Merci, Arsene, and a whole bunch of things like that. And it, maybe because it was 5:30 in the morning and I had just woken up, that I really couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. So it took some digging, and then I'm like, finally figured out that he said he was stepping down. And really my reaction was the same as you guys. It's kind of a surreal thing where, you know, we've all talked about it. We've talked about it for a few years now that the time is probably, you know, here for him to move on. And I think it was one of those things where I know we talked about it earlier this season. Like you said, is he going to, you know, see out his contract? Is he going to leave early? I mean, I think we all kind of wanted him to step down at the end of this year, but it's still kind of crazy. It still doesn't feel, you know, I don't think it's really set in yet, and because he's still on the sideline. So it's still like a normal Arsenal game. And then you realize you've only got a couple of these left. I think the word you said there, I mean, it was surreal.
And it's interesting because Arsenal immediately became the story in world football, which is really interesting when you have two Champions League semifinals coming up and we are the main story. And
well, you also had Manchester City right around like the day after locking up the title.
Yeah, I mean,
it was still all about Arsenal.
It overshadowed all of that. I mean, it's amazing that Wenger is the type of figure that still has that sort of pull in terms of media attention. But obviously, I'd prefer Arsenal was in the news for better reasons. Having said that, you know, having had a few days to digest it and listening to what other people have been saying, you know, reading various news articles, it is like you said, it still hasn't set in yet, but I at least have a little bit of perspective about it now where I've kind of gone through the initial emotion of sadness because I respect the man so much for what he's done. And you guys have heard me this season, especially talk about the fact that I thought it was past his time and he needed to go. But I don't think for me and for most level-headed Gooners, it never delved into abuse. And I think we still respected the man for everything he's provided to the club. And we wanted him to be able to go out on a positive note. And it's just unfortunate, you know, I mean, obviously there's still the chance of winning the Europa League, but it's just unfortunate that it didn't happen at the end of a fantastic season, you know, where he's lifting a trophy and that's the last image we see. So, you know, for that reason, it makes this Europa League take on a whole new meaning for me, at least just thinking, man, I really hope he wins this. It's not necessarily, I really hope the club wins this. I'm thinking, I really hope he gets this lasting moment. I mean, what's your take on that, Bill?
That's exactly where I'm at. Him producing this statement and stepping down did exactly what everybody in the media said it was going to do, and entirely on Arsenal Twitter, in that it went from complete vitriol for this man to let's celebrate him, let's send him off with the best way we possibly can. Full support from a lot of people who were absolutely dogging him. I mean, way worse than we did. I mean, we were kind of realistic and had a realistic approach to basically saying, hey, like, this guy needs to stop that, you know, step down. The game has possibly passed him by. And, you know, to see the reactions of how many people he touched in certain ways, and even Wilson, one of the former goalkeeping coaches, I saw a story about how Arsene helped him through the loss of his daughter and speaking to him about life values on the bus one day. Just, you know, absolutely blew me away to realize that this man is just bigger than possibly producing some poor results this season and maybe even in the past few years. And it was a very weird feeling for me. I don't want to quite use this analogy, but it's almost like a Stockholm syndrome in a way, where like I was like so fed up with this guy and so angry that he did this, and now this kind of happened, and you're kind of like loving the guy that hurt you, but you remember the good times, you know what I mean, before he started to hurt you. Like, it was just a whirlwind of emotions, and I just feel that I'm glad that, you know, the way that this is being done, I hope he has a bunch of games where the fans actually support him. And especially for the Europa tie, I would love him for him, like you said, AJ, to win the European competition. It was a shame that he didn't get the Champions League. And surely the pace and his style has definitely gone by. I think the days of his revitalization are over. I think he would be great suited in a higher administrative role at a club somewhere. Some people have talked about him coaching the U.S. men's national team. I had a lot of friends texting me about that, which I was like, there is absolutely no way. But, you know, I would love to just see him sent out right the feelings I had, I'm just happy. It's almost like a relief. I know it's going to be over. I know that next year may not even be any better, but just the possibility to see some free flowing football, hopefully we're both offensive and defensive, and it just doesn't look crazy, would be nice. So overall, want to see him sent out well. And, you know, just so everybody knows out there, you can think the man is past due and also still respect everything that he's done for the club in 20 some years. You can do that both. You know what I mean? So I think that should be said.
Yeah, and I think it was just really kind of an interesting reaction across all of Twitter and other social media too. And it was almost, and it's funny because even in his press conference after the game this weekend, Arson made a comment about how, it was almost like his eulogy and how he's not actually dead. And it was one of his typical dry humor type of jokes. And when he said it, when I heard that, it kind of was made me think, it's like, people are almost eulogizing him in a way, you know, because he has meant so much to the club in his 22 plus years there. I mean, all you have to do is look at all the former players who, you know, from Cesc Fabregas, Robin Van Persie, Patrick Vieira, you can, like, everybody that, you know, all the big-time players that used to play for him. I mean, not even big-time players. I mean, one of the most, you know, one of the coolest ones that I saw was from Abu Dhabi. I don't know if you guys saw that, where he talked about how, you know, Arsene helped him through some of his darkest days he's ever had. You know, and it just kind of puts into perspective that, you know, the kind of person that he is and the impact that he had on the club. And, you know, I guess for me, the timing of it is kind of interesting to me. I'm not really sure, honestly, where I come out with it yet. I'm trying to still kind of figure it out, but, you know, he's always been one, and I think we mentioned it already, but he's always been one to say that his contract is binding. It's his word. He's always going to see out his contract. It's an agreement that he made. So for him to come out now and say it, and I don't want to necessarily jump from the good things are about Arsene Wenger to, you know, I don't want to necessarily go away of that. Yeah, but I think the conversation has to go there. I think it's interesting. I don't know for me. And I think, Alex, you put it kind of in an interesting way before we started the podcast. You asked, was it a mutual split or did he jump before he got pushed? So I'm going to take your question and put it right back to you. What do you think about that?
I have to say my initial reaction when this all went down was, I think he was going to call it quits at the end of the season, but did it now to maybe see if he could inspire the team to win the Europa League, push on from there. Having said that, once I listened to Gazidis's press conference, my feeling kind of changed on that. Gazidis, I mean, while being very respectful of Wenger, his answers really seemed to indicate that the club had come to a decision and they were going to act on it at one point or another. So, you know, this is completely not based on any sort of fact or anything. You know, I saw that Ornstein had mentioned, it wasn't really clear who made the first move, but it's kind of been an ongoing discussion. And, you know, maybe the board and maybe Gazidis came to Wenger and said, like, look, at the end of the season, we're going to make a move here. How do you want to handle this? And I think Wenger maybe then, already having been leaning that way, could have said, you know what, let's just do this now, get the maximum effect and really kind of rally the fan base for one more month and see where this goes. So I tend to think it was going to happen in the summer eventually. I might have worded it a little bit harshly when I say he jumped before he was pushed, but I do think this was a mutual decision. I don't think this caught the board or Gazidis by surprise. And my gut reaction, and we'll get into this a little bit later, is I think the club has been putting out feelers to other managers for a little while. And so I don't think they're going to be completely unprepared. And based on what we've read, they weren't. I did want to kind of mention one thing. You know, people on different podcasts that I've listened to were being really harsh on Gazidis and saying, well, he didn't really answer any questions in the press conference. and he didn't mention who the next manager might be, or he didn't answer specifics. I think that was out of respect to Arsene Wenger. I genuinely think he wasn't going to come out and say, look, we really wanted to get rid of Arsene, and but we're letting him go out this way. I think he wanted to give Arsene Wenger the utmost respect in how he is being treated as he leaves. And he mentioned so many times that we want to celebrate him leaving. We want to make this special for him. I don't think there was a better way to handle this from the club's perspective without making Arsene Wenger look bad. I think this was the only way they could do it, where it really just looks like the end of an era, as opposed to, you know, we're hounding this old man out of the club. I mean, am I off on that one, Bill?
No, I the more that I, as the days went on and I read more statements, at first it was completely conspiracy, like cynicist in me or whatever you want to say. I just immediately thought he knew that they were looking at other candidates. He knew that it was ramping up, that they may be going a different direction. And he decided to, as was said before, really jump or take the decision out of Arsenal's hands. And I kind of had the thought early in the morning, like that one of somebody close to him came up to him and just kind of really stuck it in his head that, like, you know, you'll be revered, you'll be, you know, appreciated more if you do it this way, you know, and maybe your players will be inspired to deliver that European trophy for you. Make this statement now, take it out of the club's hands, you be in control of your destiny and what you want to do. And even though it may not end it exactly how you wanted, you're at least in control of it, which I think is something that he likes. So I thought that at first. Gazeta's press conference, I'm in the same boat, completely changed my opinion. And then even when I thought back about it and how the .com kind of presented it and what came about from it, I think it was more so like a mutual understanding, as was discussed, because, you know, I don't know if Gazeta's would have been as, you know, not highly spoken, but maybe as in Arsene's corner by not disrespecting him. I mean, he's obviously not going to say who the next coach is going to be yet, but I feel that you could tell in the press conference that it was kind of like, hey, we don't want to disrespect your legacy. However, we feel the club is going to move best forward, especially after a couple of these great signings that you've made in the, you know, this year and in the past couple of years. Let's try to do this the right way and have you make a statement. Or maybe he thought of the statement, but I think there was a discussion at the table that said, this is going to be it. We want this to go the best way for you. How could we do that for you? So that's my thoughts on it.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've all kind of touched on it already. He's always, like you said, the way he's talked about his contract, you know, he's never going to get out of the contract. He's never going to leave while he still has a contract. I think the only way and the only time he would ever leave the club is if somebody from the board, or whether it's Gazidis, the board, whoever it was from, you know, top leadership of the club came to him and said, look, Arsene, it's time for you to move on. We don't, you know, we want to move on. We don't want you here anymore. You know, not necessarily that harsh as we don't want you here anymore, but you kind of get the, I think you guys get the point that, you know, that I'm trying to make. That's the only way that he would walk away from this club. He's such a proud and, quite frankly, stubborn individual. And he has such a deep love for Arsenal that when you combine all those things together, I really think, you know, and it's also a respect for the club. I think that's the biggest thing there. And if the club was to come to him and say, look, Arsene, you know, with all due respect, I think your time is up, like you said, Bill, and we need to move on, and we need to kind of, you know, we need to freshen up the club. We need a new leadership. I think once that was brought to his attention, once that conversation was had, I would imagine with Gazidis, I don't think it would have been a difficult decision for him. It's just a respect thing. You know, he, I can't buy for a second that he would willingly go unless he was no longer wanted by the club. And again, that sounds a little bit harsh, but I don't really know how else to phrase it.
No, and I think there's definitely something to that, you know, to the extent where because I think he's divorced now, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And so yes. I almost think the club is his wife in a really weird way. I'm sure there's a better way to say that, but the club is his wife and it is his life. And so I almost think for a while, he might have just held on to the fact that, like, I don't have anything else. Like, I've invested my entire life in this, for better or for worse. Like, I've invested everything I have. And he always talks about, like, how he wants to make the fans happy, even if he is unhappy or things like that. And so, you know, Ian, I think, you know, you bring up a good point, especially how you said you just couldn't see him not honoring the contract, especially because I feel like he always has thought that he could turn the ship around. Now, you know, whether we get into things like the empty seats and the loss of revenue and things like that, I'm sure those are all factors that weighed into it. Whether that actually weighed on his mind, and whether that might have actually turned the tide in his own head, I can't say for sure. But I definitely think there were discussions at some point where the board and Gazidis especially, because if you've noticed this entire season, Gazidis has been pretty quiet about everything. You really haven't seen him surface other than, you know, commercial and marketing deals. Like, I think I heard Arsblog say that, and I was thinking about it as well, that you really haven't heard from him. So all of a sudden for him to kind of appear in this platform, the way he delivered that message, not revealing too much, but at the same time revealing a lot. That's kind of how I took it. And I watched that and I said, this is a guy who's playing poker to some extent. And he's very well versed in media communications and how things are going to come across. I think he chose his words very carefully. And now, you know, what's kind of not upsetting, but a little disappointing is obviously how some of Arsene's quotes since then have been skewed. I don't know if you guys have seen the headlines about how he was blaming the fans and the lack of unity. He said something about the lack of fan unity, like, this is an international club and we're so highly respected, so the lack of fan unity was really disappointing. And when I read that quote on its own, I'll admit I got a little annoyed, because I said to myself, no, the lack of good results and the lack of progress has been what's hurt fan unity. But then I read the rest of it, and he said, you know, don't get me wrong, like, it's not the fans' fault. You know, there's been bad stretches and this and that. But of course, the next day, all the headlines you see were, you know, Wenger slams fans and, you know, goes on a tirade. And it's just, and Bill, I mean, you're my media hitman here. So, I want to hear what you got to say about that.
He literally, in the same breath of that quote about fan unity, ended with, I do not want a negative headline about fans produced from this statement. You know, and he was just trying to explain how we're an international club. And I think he was trying to make reference to the fans in England specifically, or the ones that go to the games more often than not, you know, that live there. And, you know, but he did not backtrack, but he wanted to make clear that he obviously knew it wasn't the fans' fault. But I think he was trying to allude to the fact that, you know, fan unrest was part of the reason, you know, why he, you know, maybe the club didn't do as well to get out of the gutter, but he quickly, I think, knew that he was part of the reason that they were down as low as they did. I'm not going to lie. When I first read the first part in the paragraph, I got mad and was ready to tweet. And then I quickly saw a video of the press conference and watched that first. And they completely forgot that whole statement that he made about how he didn't want to have a negative headline. I don't think he really should have brought up the fans at all, because I think he should know what the media is going to do to him. And he usually was very, very good with the media, but these people have it out for him so bad. I mean, you know, we're talking here about, you know, whether Arsene or Gazidis made the decision and who was it and whatever. NBC and the way they took that to just say, well, he said he'd honor his contract and now he's not, so this man's a liar and this, it was like, you know, give it a break. You should be happy, but they're probably sad that they can't bash the man anymore. You know what I mean? So, but
easy clicks are going out the window for him.
Right. So, I mean, you kind of get angry and you're wondering, why do they do this? And I'm quickly learning, as I've been blocked by most of media Twitter, that, you know, hey, probably they want this interaction, which is kind of funny. Why did they block me? Because you think I would generate a lot of kind of site clicks for them. You know what I mean? So NBC, you need to rethink your marketing strategy there, I think.
But I mean, like, and kind of going off on something Ian, you mentioned earlier, and Bill as well, after this news broke, I also, it it was kind of the nostalgia that set in where, like, mm-hmm. now that this was finalized, you can then go back to the beginning
yes.
and think of all the great things that he did. And all of a sudden you're watching these tribute videos and you're remembering the Invincibles, even to the extent that we didn't get to see as much of them just due to our, you know, being in the US and TV and all that. And then Henry Winter posted a series of tweets of things that Arson did for fans around the world, things he did to support the community, charities, things like that. And you realize you really couldn't have had a better representative for the club. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at guys like Mourinho and, you know, even, you know, other managers, I'm not going to name names just because I can't think of any right now, but basically Mourinho. And you see the contrast in how they're perceived around the world. And Arsene's always been considered a gentleman. And I think amongst actual football people, there was always sympathy for his position in terms of dealing with the stadium debt, having to sell his best players. And then only recently within, you know, the past 3 or 4 years, has it really become, okay, there's no more excuses now. The debt's paid off for the most part. You have the resources. Now you're just not getting it done. There's no excuse. So when he retired, or, you know, when he announced he was stepping down, you saw an outcry from, not an outcry, you saw a response from those people basically saying, you know, we still acknowledge all the great things you did. What kind of irritated me was the journalists like John Cross, who plays both sides of the fence at all times, all of a sudden saying, oh, Arsenal fans should, you know, be so grateful for this man and this and that. And I'm like, well, you've also mocked the guy at numerous occasions. You've posted so many misleading headlines. You know, remember Match of the Day used to make fun. They made fun of Arsene Wenger falling down at a train station once, mm-hmm. and how it was so funny that this old man fell down. I mean, at the 180 in media treatment is definitely one thing, but just kind of, Ian, you brought this up off camera before we started, but for the three of us growing up in the U.S., Arsene Wenger is really all that we've known. And, you know, maybe I'd love to hear kind of your personal connection with Arsene Wenger as in becoming an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly played an integral part in that. I mean, I've said it before on the podcast, and I've said it before on Twitter, the reason that I'm an Arsenal fan, it's really is Thierry Henry. Spent lots of time after school in the library watching highlights of him scoring incredible goals, and really that's what got me into it. Without Arsene Wenger, that doesn't really happen. I mean, I think his ability, and I don't think it's overstating it to say that he completely changed the football world. I mean, it's at least in England. He made it okay, and he opened the door to, you know, I can't take full credit for this. I believe it was Elliot Yankee Gunner made this point on their podcast, saying that he showed that it was okay to go to the Eredivisie and Serie A and Ligue 1 and get all these players that you don't really know. He made it okay to, you know, not rely on only England to, you know, players in England to build your squad. He opened the door to what we know the Premier League to be today, where 95% of the top players in that league are not English. So I think really, if you want to talk about an overall impact, his impact really is that, is he opened the door for the English game to become what it is today. But for me personally, I think it was the thing that will always stay with me is just kind of the respect that he had for the game and the people around it. I mean, obviously there were a few managers that we wish that I forget who saw it, but I saw it on Twitter that they wished that he would just chin Mourinho, walk off to a pub and have a pint with Sir Alex Ferguson. Mm-hmm. And that would be just like such a great way to end, just such a great way to end it. But you know, there were he had his enemies. He had his managers that Alan Pardew, I think, comes to mind, where they just didn't like each other, and he wasn't exactly nice to. But as a whole, his respect for the game the game as not necessarily the individual game that was in front of him, but football, soccer as a whole. He has such a respect for that. And you can see that in the way that he cared for the club and the care for the players. And that's something that I think always really struck me, just kind of about him. So, you know, there's really, you know, kind of to answer your question, I went a little bit of a tangent, but really that's the thing that always stuck with me. And I've always really appreciated that, I guess.
Bill, what about you?
I was actually lucky enough when I was younger to have an encounter with a guy who actually lived, a kid who's my age, close to me where we grew up, who traveled a little bit for soccer. And he would always, you know, talk to me about these teams. His dad traveled overseas and everything like that. And we ended up going to the same college, and he played soccer for that college. So when we were talking there, he was like, yo, he's like, you remember that team I was talking about? He's like, you know, they've been doing amazing. They got this guy from Holland who's just going crazy, and they signed this French kid who's been doing amazing stuff. So, you know, I started watching them early, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, basically on library videos. It was kind of funny that Ian said that we would be in the library watching things. And then when Fox really started to actually kick into gear around that time and show some games, you were able to catch some things here and there, which were nice. And the thing that attracted me at the most was the style of football that they played. And when I talked to my buddy Brandon, was his name, about that, he had said, you know, it's down to the manager. He's French. He's been involved in football for a long time. And I asked him, you know, what his name was. And when he said his name, I was like, did they change his name to play, you know, to coach for this team? Like, that's how naive I was at the time. And so I obviously just started researching the even Arsenal and everything into it. And then it just became a full-on obsession. The Invincible season happened, and everything just completely blew up from there. I think Ian brought up a great point about this type of player that the EPL brings in now. They were definitely not afraid to have other players come in that weren't domestic to try to influence the game and change the game. There was an interview from Sir Alex Ferguson in Arsene Wenger's first season where he was criticizing him because he came from Japan, as Alex Ferguson said, and that he was trying to change the game here so much that it wasn't going to work. And I think if Sir Alex changed his game a little bit to kind of compete with him. And the legacy goes so much deeper than that. I think he's provided some influence on how to be not necessarily self-sustaining, but how to, you know, build a stadium, how to understand, you know, how to get fan dynamic involved, and really how to bring a different sort of game to the table that England fans, I really think, now enjoy. And he's criminally underrated for that. He doesn't get it talked about enough by the media. And everything's just for clicks. Everybody's looking for the car crash, and nobody's really looking for anything else besides that. And maybe how he built the automobile, you know. They're not really looking at that core. And some of these tribute videos that come out from some of these media writers has been nice. I've seen a couple of threads. I saw Henry Winter's thread. And my thing, you know, that will really turned me on to them was the style of football. And that was a credit to him. Free flowing, powerful. It was almost like freight trains moving at an even faster speed, but with grace.
Well, you know, when you talk about the Invincibles, man, they could play any style they needed to.
Right.
They could lock it down and win 1-0, or they could beat you 5-0.
Mm-hmm. Whatever it right. called for on the day. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the interesting thing is when you think about the squad he built, Henri and Bergkamp were not big stars when he brought them in. Henri was a converted winger that he turned into a striker, and Henri had struggled when he was in Italy. Same with Bergkamp, I believe. I remember there was a famous headline from Stuart Pearce, who was one of the managers in England back in the day. And when Bergkamp was signed, he said that Bergkamp was a waste of money. He would never amount to anything. So it wasn't like Arsene Wenger was signing these big superstars and then just putting him in a team together. He took players that he saw something in that maybe no one else saw. And that to me will always be his lasting legacy, is the faith he had in players to get the best out of them. Not only that he could get the best out of them, but that they could get the best out of themselves as well. And, you know, towards the end of his tenure, I will say that worked against him. But in terms of my own personal connection, I mean, my story is not too dissimilar to you guys. You know, the Premier League was not that accessible to us in the United States until, you know, probably the mid-2000s, I want to say, which is right around the time of the Invincibles. So I knew of them. I watched a few games here and there, and certainly I love the way they play. And Bill, like you mentioned, and Ian as well, the power that they played with, the pace that they played with, it was fluid. There was the interchanging of and movement that was associated. You know, you'd have Bergkamp pull out wide, then Henri would go up the middle. You know, Pires cutting inside on his strong foot. Just the ability to understand and read the game as it comes to you, as opposed to repeating certain patterns of play because that's how you do it. You know, I think for a long time in England there was this idea of the only way to play was, okay, hard tackles in midfield, get the ball out wide and cross it. And play with two strikers, always two strikers. And then Arsene Wenger comes in and completely revolutionizes that with skilled wing players, but also these dynamic midfielders who could get in the box on their own, you know, especially Patrick Vieira, a creative type like Bergkamp who could, you know, create magic from anywhere on the pitch. And, you know, the more the game became accessible, I started watching a lot on Fox Soccer Channel back in the day when, you know, Arsenal had Fabregas and Nasri and Arshavin and Van Persie. And that team was just so much fun to watch because they played in a different way than those Invincibles teams. They kept possession, but these were all very skilled, technical footballers who could control possession and create chances. And just the romanticism of their game. And I think more than anything, Arsene Wenger is a romantic. He really believes in the game in its purest sense. So with all the oil money that's come in and these, you know, the park the bus kind of managers, I really think that hurts Arsene Wenger to his core to see that. And I just don't think he ever figured out to adapt, but ultimately to make a long story short, just his belief in the beauty of the game, like you guys were saying, is really the main thing that he contributed. And that was a great point you brought up about scouting new areas, because all of a sudden the French league is one of the go-to leagues for English clubs where they can sign really good, talented players. You don't see N'Golo Kanté end up at Leicester City if not for what Arsene Wenger did 10, 15 years prior in terms of the players he brings into the league. Eden Hazard, you don't see that kind of player come to England. You might have seen them go to Spain or Germany before. So think of all the amazing players who have come from France specifically and become stars in the Premier League. So the ability to, like you said, make the Premier League more of a global spectacle, he made the greatest manager in history, Alex Ferguson, reassess his own tactics. Mm-hmm. That should tell you something right there. You know, that would be like in the NBA, a coach coming in and making Phil Jackson basically change the way he played the game.
Right.
So that's my long-winded response to that. But I think we all kind of have similar feelings about it. And you know, it's not just nostalgia setting. And I think it's just genuinely the respect that he deserves amongst not just Arsenal fans, but everyone associated with the game.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you made an interesting point there. You talked about how he adapted the style of play when he went to that Fabregas, Nasri, Van Persie, that era. And, you know, he did, and it's kind of crazy though. He did show an ability to adapt early on in his career. It was, you know, 15 years into his career. So it's not really early on. But I think really, I don't know the reason why. I don't know if it was, like you said, his faith in players, or if it was something to do with the club, the financial situation. I don't know. He just happened to miss the boat on the, you know, adapting to, like you said, when the oil money came in. You said that hurt him to his core, and I think it genuinely did. I agree with you there. But when that happened, I don't know why. He didn't show an ability. Or not that he didn't show an ability, he just failed to adapt correctly to that, which really kind of puts us in the situation that we're in now. So I guess the next logical question from that is, where does Arsenal Football Club go from there? Because, you know, if it wasn't clear before, Arsenal Football Club is more than Arsene Wenger. It is bigger than that, and the club needs to move on. And I think they, you know, they obviously are going to. So where does the club go from here?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? You've seen so many names thrown out. I think it's more than just a managerial choice that is on the club's plate right now. I really think the direction of the club is kind of at stake here. And a lot of it depends on Champions League qualification, let's be honest. If you get Champions League qualification, the money that comes with that, the extra exposure, the TV rights, all that stuff that does influence your transfer budget, the type of player you can bring in, the type of manager you can bring in, to be quite honest. So it really becomes a discussion of, are you looking for a short-term fix now for one or two seasons while you keep implementing this new structure with the new personnel that we brought in? Or are you thinking a long-term project, you know, in which case someone who's going to be here for 5-6 years, even longer than that? And you know, frankly, I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. I don't know what the best approach is. You know, my own personal feeling is that you should go for a little bit more of an experienced manager, at least at the top level. So someone like a Vieira or an Arteta, as much as I think they could be great managers, I'm not sure the club's in a position to risk that. I personally would go with for someone a little bit more proven. You know, obviously for me, Allegri would be the dream, but I'm not sure how realistic that is. I mean, I will say, if Juventus don't win the title this year, I think there's a very good chance he leaves. And so maybe he comes looking for a new challenge, and he's mentioned wanting to coach in England. Luis Enrique, I gotta be honest, when I read the name, I wasn't thrilled with that link, but you are talking about a guy who won La Liga, won the Champions League. Yes, he did it with Messi, Neymar, and Suarez, and I acknowledge that that makes it a lot easier. I really like Nagelsmann at Hoffenheim. Young German manager. From everything I've read from people who watch the Bundesliga more than me, really tactically astute. And then Jardim at Monaco. For me, he checks a lot of the boxes, honestly.
Yeah.
He knows how to coach young players, get the best out of young players. He gives them a chance. He can coach attacking style. He can coach defensive style. And I feel like he's probably frustrated being at Monaco because he knows he'll never have the spending capability that PSG has. So the title he won last year was an amazing accomplishment, but I think he realizes that is more unlikely in the future, just given what he's up against. So he's someone who I could see looking for a new challenge. But I think for me, you should go with someone more proven, certainly Vieira. It's just very hard for me to put a lot of stock into what he's doing because he's doing it in MLS, you know? And, you know, I never know how much to read into that because it is MLS. And Arteta, learning from Guardiola, I mean, you can never understate how important that is. But one of the things that I thought about was, he played with a lot of the guys he would be coaching. And I do think that's a very weird mental adjustment to make for the players and him as a coach. So I'm a little leery about that. But the only thing is, you know, Gazidis kind of came out with some quotes about what he was looking for. He was like, progressive kind of football, you know, keeping with the Arsenal style, you know, keeping with our values. That made me think maybe Arteta's a more serious candidate than I'd initially thought. But those are the kind of the names that have come to the surface since Friday. So, I mean, only 3 days really. But Bill, I'll throw it to you. I mean, do you think we should be looking short term, long term?
It's an interesting conundrum because I don't know the answer to the question either. I'm going to try to process that thought, like with speaking right now, I almost think that somebody like Vieira or Arteta would be manager in like 3 to 4 years once they've acquired some more experience. So that almost, I guess you would want to lead me to say that they're going to go short-term fix, but I think short-term still might be 2 to 3 years. And in today's football, I don't know if that's short-term or long-term. But I can see somebody coming in with experience, and I think if it works out very well, they roll with that train for as long as they can and maybe put off another plan behind that. I have a tough time seeing Vieira and Arteta coming immediately. Maybe Vieira, like you said, he's doing really, really well in the MLS. Don't really know how well that's going to equate besides his own playing experience in the EPL. I think Monaco's manager, Jardim, is, I think that that is the one that if they wanted to kind of do something similar like they did with Arsene, but just with a little bit more experience at the time and a little bit more wherewithal, he, as you said, checks a lot of the boxes. That's who I think they're going to hire. I just think the way that he sets up his teams, I think that they can play very good football. I think that they've shown a lot of ability on offense. The defense does not lack because of that, which we've seen with Arsenal in the past probably 2 seasons, this season for sure. So he would be my pick. Whether he's short-term or long-term, I don't know. It's Arsenal. It would not shock me if Arteta and Vieira were manager next season. But personally, my opinion is they're going to bring somebody in with some experience, Allegri. You know, even Jardim with his experience, somebody like that to keep the club going and keep things moving for the next several years. And once one of these other managers that were former players acquires a little bit more experience, because Arteta being under Guardiola for a couple more seasons certainly wouldn't hurt. And him coming after that reign with him, I would probably take that at that time as well. I know certain managers that I do not want near the club whatsoever are named Brendan Rodgers. And the fact that anybody on Arsenal Twitter thinks that that would be the type of progressive football that would get us to the top just has shaken me to the core. So I'm going to say Jardim with a look to a view of an Arteta Vieira. And out of those two, I don't even know who I would like.
Sorry, go ahead, man.
No, I was just gonna say that's a coin flip. That's all. Like that's kind of like pick your pleasure there.
It's for me, it's a really interesting discussion because we need to kind of take a second and recalibrate what we consider short term and long term for a manager. Right. I mean, we're talking about, you know, somebody short term and then throwing 3 to 4 years out there. In the football world, 3 to 4 years is long term.
Yeah, that's what I was like trying to allude to. Yeah. Right.
So if we want to say short term, I mean, really, short term is a year or two, right? So it's a really interesting kind of discussion. And I saw Carlo Ancelotti's name thrown around a little bit in the last day or two. And it kind of brings up an interesting point. One of the names that I really, really like personally is Nagelsmann from out of Germany. Like you said, young, progressive, tactically astute, everything that you described him. But it really kind of puts together two different schools of thought. I mean, do you want to go, and again, I don't really want to use short term because short term is a year, maybe two. And quite personally, and for me, I don't see bringing somebody in for a year. I really don't see the point in that. There's a lot of, let's put it this way. One of the things that I know that the club is going to do, and I feel really strongly about it, is they're going to go after somebody who has name value. They're not going to, you know, pull somebody who nobody's really heard of to try and follow Arsene Wenger. I don't think you can really do that. I think that's, you know, I don't remember where David Moyes was before United hired him.
Everton.
It was at Everton? Okay, that's right. And he was relatively well respected, but I do think that when he was hired, it was still kind of, wait, this is the guy like that we're bringing in to follow up Alex Ferguson. Right. And I think that really put a lot of pressure on him. And I think that's something that you really have to make sure that this new manager is, whether it's somebody like an Ancelotti who's super experienced, he's seen everything, done everything, or it's somebody like Julian Nagelsmann or Patrick Vieira, whoever it is, that manager has to be able to understand the pressure that he's facing by following Arsene Wenger, but not let it get to him. I'm not going to pretend to know all the other managers out there. I like Allegri. I like what he does. I like how, I like how he's tactically adaptable. Quite frankly, I like the Bundesliga a lot. I love the style of play you see there. I would love to see somebody from Germany brought in. I think that, in my personal opinion, the way that Arsenal should shape itself as a club is kind of follow the mold that you see Borussia Dortmund follow, except with a little bit more money to spend. Right. So you can still, once a season, add a 45 to 60 million pound player, but you're also bringing through young players. You're also developing young players. I mean, like Dortmund, for example, they just signed Jadon Sancho, the English kid. They brought through Christian Pulisic. They've brought through so many different young players over the years. You know, I want that aspect, but I also want us to still spend the money. And I know that's another thing too, is that's going to be a lot different for this manager. Is that manager is not going to have the kind of control that Arsene Wenger had. Arsene Wenger had his hands in everything, right? So you can say it's entirely up to him whether he's giving young players a chance, signing players. The new manager, yeah, he's going to have a say. He's going to be able to put his opinion in. But ultimately, it's Mislintat's decision who comes in. So it's going to be – I think there's a couple different things. And I like everything that Gazeta said as far as what they're looking for in the manager and the qualities that they want. I agree. It needs to be a stylish style of football. Stylish style. That makes a lot of sense.
Super style.
Yeah, right. It needs to be an attractive brand of football. They need to represent the values of Arsenal. And I think that has a lot, that kind of ties into what I was saying about to how to handle the pressure of following Arsene Wenger. And he needs to be open to giving you young players an opportunity. That being said, where does that leave me as far as where does this club go forward? I have no idea. I think all the names that are out there, they're out there for a reason. Ornstein said that Allegri was, has a lot of, there's a lot of people that like him in the front office of the club. They it's somebody that they would, I think, would like to bring in if the opportunity presents itself. But like I said, I don't know who it's going to be. I just think it's interesting the dynamic of, the types of managers that could come in and what direction the club really wants to go. I think they need to bring in somebody who's they could see being here for 6-7 years. I don't think a short term, we're going to bring somebody in to kind of fill the gap for a year or two until the weight of Arsene Wenger being gone is no longer on the manager's shoulders. Right. So, for example, bringing in Ancelotti for a year and then Nagelsmann or Vieira the year after. That 1 year isn't going to reduce the weight of the task that is at that manager's hand, in my opinion. So if you think that Vieira is going to be your guy, or if you think that Nagelsmann is going to be your guy, hire him now.
Yeah.
Don't bring in Ancelotti or somebody like that for a year because it's not going to bridge a gap. That pressure is still going to be there. Arsene Wenger is going to have a statue in front of the stadium at some point in time. Right. So it doesn't reduce the pressure at all. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think Ancelotti more than any candidate would be a complete stopgap. There's no way he would be there more than two seasons tops.
Like, that's going to say two.
Yeah. Two maximum. And, kind of just going off the things you were saying, Ian, the following Arsene Wenger, yeah, I've heard a lot of people say no one wants to be the guy that follows the guy. Everyone wants to be the guy that follows the guy that followed the guy, which is, I mean, that sounds horrible. Now that I heard it out loud,
you got it right though.
But that is the phrase. For you. But I mean, I think at this point, managers realize that the top jobs are at such a premium that if there is one available, even if it means replacing a guy like Wenger, I think you jump. And, you know, Ian, when you started talking about the Bundesliga, you know, a couple other names that came to mind were Tedesco at Schalke and Hasenhüttl at Red Bull Leipzig. And I mean, that, you know, Red Bull Leipzig are a club that play a really nice style of football as well. And I think there's a lot of quality players in Germany that you can bring over for actually quite cheap, I must say. And so maybe having that connection would be helpful. You also brought up the structure of the club with Mislintat doing the scouting, Snellehi doing a lot of the closing of deals, and kind of making sure that you sign those guys that Mislintat has scouted. So you really need just a coach. You don't need someone who's well-versed in the transfer stuff. And that is a great point you brought up about how Arsene Wenger had his hands in kind of all the jars at Arsenal. And that sort of power will never exist in football anymore. And I think that's a really interesting point. So you really just need someone who is going to focus tactically on getting this team into a good defensive shape, and while at the same time maintaining that free-flowing style. So the one thing I will say that a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, we should bring back someone with a connection to the club. I tend to think that that notion is quite outdated at this point. I don't think the fact that someone played here is going to make them a better manager. And I'll use this analogy. Well, it's not an analogy, but it's just kind of how I thought about it. If Patrick Vieira had played at Manchester City and had a great career there, retired, went to MLS and coached there and was doing well, would you still think that that would be a person you should hire? No, probably not, because you're just thinking at an MLS manager who was a good player at one point. So why would the fact that he was a good player for this club make him more qualified to be the manager 12 years after the fact that, what, you know, when he last played here? I don't think that just because you played at a club, that means you're going to necessarily be a successful manager. I think if you have a great candidate who happened to play at your club, even better, you know, but I don't think it necessarily guarantees anything. So that's just kind of my two cents on that subject. And Bill, I'm kind of curious to hear your thought on that former player aspect. I mean, do you put a lot of weight into that? And Ian, your thought as well?
Yeah, the former player aspect, I mean, you know, MLS is MLS. You know, I've been in a lot of different discussions this past 2 weeks about people from MLS saying this. I mean, I said, I commented on Zlatan being in a retirement league, and then he scored that, he had that 4-goal game or whatever it was, or scored those two crazy goals, and everybody's up my butt saying this and that. And I was like, hey, yeah, I was wrong. He's doing great, but, you know, he wasn't doing anything last year in the EPL. So, you know, I mean, he scored some goals and did some things. So, you know, with former players coming back, I mean, you don't want to dog MLS. You don't want to dog Vieira. He's doing great things. But, it, you know, is his philosophy on how he coaches going to be the right fit? Like, that's what I think you need to get the right type of mind in there, as you were saying. Somebody that's going to be suited for the position to work with these people to get the club back running on the ground again, full steam. And if that player can do that, then that's great. I'm very unsure about Vieira. This is going to sound weird for how much shit I've given Arteta over the years. But I almost just think Arteta being so forward playing and then also then relying back on defense and just kind of being the maestro there for us for a couple of years, whether his legs were gone or not. I think he's very intelligent. And I think out of any of the players, and I can't even believe I'm going to say this, I would actually, you know, if he came in, I wouldn't mind it as much. Vieira kind of gives me question marks, and I have no idea why. I don't know if it's because he just went to coach in MLS. I don't know if it's, you know, because he hooked up with Man City and then decided to go over and coach. I would have thought coaching in a league that you want to coach in some capacity would be better, a chance to get that. I mean, besides that, those two, are there really any other former Arsenal players throwing their hats in the ring? I don't really know of too many names that I've seen. I definitely think you have to pick the right person. I mean, look at Wenger. Didn't play there, wasn't connected to the club, was a very obscure thought in the media at the time for where he was coming from and what he was doing. As I said before, he was coming from Japan, right? What does he know? And revolutionize things. So I think it's all about just finding the right fit for what your plan as a business, as a football club, is going forward to get the maximum amount out of this manager. If it happens to be a former player, great. I don't think that they should be willingly looking for former players, though. I don't think that that's a right approach. It has to fit their model.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. I think the only reason that Vieira and Arteta's names are even getting mentioned is because they're former Arsenal players. Honestly, I mean, look at all the other names that are thrown out there, minus Brendan Rodgers, because we're not going to talk about him. Look at all the other names that have been linked with this opening, right?
Yeah.
They're established managers. I mean, even Nagelsmann, sure, he's only been around for a couple of years, but he's established himself on the world stage as a top quality manager. And Arteta, he hasn't done that. He's an assistant. Vieira, I mean, sure, yeah, he's an MLS. He's doing a good job over there. But I don't think he's established himself on the world scene to be seen as a top manager. This is Arsenal. I mean, how many other management positions would you put in front of Arsenal in the world? I mean, you've got Bayern, Barcelona, Madrid, United,
Chelsea, City, probably.
You really think that as a manager,
coming with the in, money, with like, the money they have,
yeah. Okay, yeah, okay,
and then maybe Juventus, and then okay. After that, I think Arsenal's right there,
right? And that's really my point. Sure, you can give or take a couple of those teams, and it's what's more important for that manager. I mean, I think, in my opinion, as to be a manager, I think the tradition of the club that you're going to would mean a lot. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's all about the money that they're going to give you and your best chance at winning. But regardless of that, Arsenal is still a top 10 job in the world. And I don't think there's any denying that. There's no doubt about it. They're one of the top most enviable management positions in the world. So there's absolutely no reason. I don't care who it is because they played for your club. If you're not a good enough manager.
And you mentioned the money that would be available. And I only bring that up because Jeremy Wilson at the Telegraph released an article a couple hours ago, just basically saying that the club would only have $50 million to spend this summer before any sales were made. So, I mean, I don't think that's right. Personally, I think there's probably a little bit more, especially if you make the Champions League. And you know there's going to be some big sales, but to hire a guy like Vieira who coaches in MLS, which has such a different transfer rule, you know, market, the way that works, even Arteta not having the experience to balance the budget and do all that sort of stuff, I think that's a really big shift. So I think you need someone with that experience. Just to kind of transition, because I'm curious, it kind of goes along with what type of manager you'd bring in, but let's assume that 50 million number is correct, that's what we have. You know, because we brought in Aubameyang and Lacazette, we kind of changed the wage structure. Ozil resigned with big wages. So you may have a little bit less money to spend. You know, who do you trust with that smaller budget? And also, there's going to be one big outgoing sale. There has to be. There just will be. I'm 100% certain of that. And I've kind of narrowed it down to three names in my own mind. I think it's either Bellerin, Ramsey, or Lacazette. And the reason I say Lacazette, people get surprised. I think he and Aubameyang can play together, but I have this feeling that he might be the one to go. Bellerin, just because he can probably get you 50 or 60 million. Ramsey's the one I think you can't afford to lose, but you know, there's been talk about him not re-signing his deal, and you know, maybe you entice him with the captainship. I don't really know. So there's going to be a lot of outgoing players regardless this summer, regardless of who's hired. I mean, who do you trust with a transfer budget, and what kind of players do you expect to see leaving the summer? Like, I could list, I mean, obviously Petr Cech has to go. You think Ospina probably goes. I could see Welbeck going, Lucas Perez, he's still on our books. He's probably going. I could see Mustafi going, honestly.
Yeah, I was going to throw him in your list there.
Yeah.
Him and Bellerin are my top two to go out this summer.
I think that's very realistic. Wilshire's another one I could see going. There's a lot of names I just threw out, and I could see Iwobi, depending on who the manager is. I could see him possibly being one that goes. Bill's
praying for him to go
for that one. But
or maybe they'll play him on the left and he'll succeed. Who knows?
He's great for Nigeria.
But that's
how, man. I know.
He's so good
for those
them.
With those players, the squad we have. Ian, I'll throw it to you first. Who do you trust with that, and who do you think goes out?
Who do I trust with that? Well, I think I've really got to put my trust in the people that the club have already brought in to deal with that. Like I said before, it's not necessarily going to be on the manager to make the majority of these decisions. And sure, let's assume that we lose Bellerin, Mustafi, let's say Wilshire goes, let's say Welbeck goes. I think Lacazette stays. I don't think he goes anywhere. But regardless of exactly who goes, let's just assume the club's going to be less talented than we were this year. For me, that's going to require a manager that, you know, is more tactically astute, somebody who's going to be able to get the best out of the players at his disposal. The transfer budget is, like I said, it's not. I don't necessarily need a manager that is really well versed in that aspect of it, because I think that's why the club is bringing in Mislintat and everybody else they brought into. He's actually the only person's name that I can pronounce, so that's why I keep saying it. but that's why the club brought those guys in, is to handle that, so the manager can focus on coaching, right? He needs to be a coach more so than a manager. So is that Allegri? Is it? I keep going back to Allegri and Nagelsmann because they're my top two. Jardim, fine. I mean, those three, whoever is going to be able to get the most out of the players at his disposal. That's really what it comes down to for me, because the club is bringing in other people to deal with the transfers. You know, that's just kind of, it's going to be a weird thing, but we have to get used to the fact that our manager is not going to control everything anymore.
Right. It's a weird thought for me, because, you know, you're thinking, well, how are all these pieces going to work together? Like, clearly if I cannot pronounce his name well, but Milos, if he could, no disrespect, because he's done a great job scouting so far, but if he could bring in people who, like, I mean, is he going to talk to the manager? I mean, he's going to obviously have to get a list and then find out what will corroborate, right? But if it's not exactly what the manager is looking for, but is a good enough player, that manager has to be able to adapt to that, right? It's not kind of like what we've been used to. Although many people say that Xhaka and who else were the Stats DNA signings and weren't Wenger, Mustafi. They weren't Arsene signings, supposedly. But I mean, that's the biggest dynamic I think that we're as fans going to have to get used to, and whoever the new manager is going to have to be pretty astute at being able to possibly take some potential stars that he may not think would fit and make them fit and bring out the best in them. So that's going to be the most important key there.
Yeah, no, I think at least at this point, you're not going to see the entire squad turnover. That just, it just doesn't, you know, logistically doesn't make sense. So, you know, maybe this summer you see one big name come in, and then three or four kind of small, not smaller names, I shouldn't say that, but like three or four more just guys who can be starters but aren't necessarily stars. So, you know, I think you obviously, you need a goalkeeper, and, you know, Timo Horn at Köln, Makes a lot of sense there because he's got a relegation clause, and you get him for like £4 million, and I think that's a really good deal. So yeah. Let's see, you know, let's say you solve your goalkeeper crisis by signing him and then bringing back Emiliano Martinez to be the number two. That, you know, so you've addressed one spot there. Center back, I saw some names mentioned. There's a guy at Wolfsburg. I couldn't pronounce his name, so I'm not going to try. And then there's also Abu Diallo, I think, at Mainz, who I saw his name mentioned. I don't really think you need a huge attacking signing, honestly, because I'm not sure where you're going to play all these guys for starters. Let's assume you keep Lacazette. All of a sudden, you have Aubameyang, Lacazette, Mkhitaryan, Ozil, Ramsey. There's not really no big name attacking player is going to want to come where there's no guarantee of a starting spot.
Yeah. And maybe a wide player, but
yeah, maybe a winger. Maybe. Yeah. That's a good point. Maybe a true winger. But other than that, like, I think you got to look at center midfield, someone to partner with Xhaka. You know, Elneny's a great role player. Wilshire's lost a step and just, he's never going to be the player he was. And Ramsey does struggle with injury issues, so maybe that's a spot you look to. And, you know, aside from that, you know, I think you can kind of fill in some holes around the squad. But the core of a decent squad is there. It's just you need to find a manager who can make it work. So, I'm going to be very curious to see how it unfolds. I mean, obviously, depending on where the manager's from, they might have a list of targets that they give to Mislintat and say, look, these are some guys I'm interested in, but I'll also work with you on this. So that, you know, Billy brought up a great point about how that dynamic is going to work, how that interplay is going to work. You know, we're not used to that power struggle between three different individuals. And I think you're even seeing that in the manager search, because from everything we've read, Snelahi is the one pushing for Luis Enrique because he knows him from Barcelona. Mislintat is pushing for Nagelsmann or Tedesco. And then Gazidis is the one maybe pushing for Arteta or Vieira, those kinds of guys. So even now, you're going to see how that dynamic works. So I think for me, and I know we kind of want to get into the Atletico for a couple of minutes, but for me, the thing is, the club is in flux for a little bit, but it's a little bit exciting as well. It's kind of given me something to get excited for next season, where you don't necessarily write the season off before it started. I don't know. What's kind of your take on that, Ian?
Yeah, it's going to be really, I think it's exciting. Like you said, I think you explained it perfectly well. We're at a point, really at a crossroads for the club, and it's kind of crazy to see. It's going to be kind of nuts to see where they go with it. You know, kind of just to move this discussion along a little bit, real quick, one word answer. And throw it to you, Bill. Do you think that they already have the replacement lined up? Yes or no?
Yes.
Alex?
Yes.
All right. You guys think that they already have them locked down? Like, they know who it's going to be. They just can't announce it yet because they're under contract still.
As AJ said at the beginning of the podcast, for the timing of when this came out, his statement, I think they have to know. And if they don't know, I'm scared. So I hope they know.
I see that. I think that's a really good point Bill brought up. I think it's a really bad look for the club if they don't already have at least a number one target in place. Maybe to the point where at least informal discussions have happened, and then you're like, all right, are you interested in coming? Because we're going to act on this Wenger thing, and we want to be ready to go as soon as either the season ends, or maybe even a little before that, if that specific manager's team has nothing to play for. Given how Arsenal conduct themselves, I don't think we announce anything until the season ends.
Right.
But you never know. But I mean, I'll throw that question back to you, Ian. I mean, do you think they've got their guy?
Yeah, 100%. They've got their guy. They know who it's going to be. They've already spoken to their manager. And as soon as the season's over for us, as soon as Arsen gets his send off, gets his farewell, they'll give it a few days and then they're going to announce it. And then they're going to get working on the summer. They're going to working towards next season. They're not going to waste any time. I don't know why, but for some reason I have faith in the club getting it done quick and on time.
You have to. World Cup is coming up.
We've yeah, never done true. It before. This club has never done it before, but hey, you know, there's a big change. There's new people in charge, and they want to make their statement. They want to show that they're the ones in charge of the club now, so they're not going to waste any time. So move on to very, very quickly. We want to get a couple of thoughts here on the Europa semifinal first leg coming up this week on Thursday. Man, that's going to be tough. But you know what? I think I like our chances. I mean, maybe it's just the romantic in me wanting to see Arsene ride off into the sunset with a European trophy. But I think we're going to get it done. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be tight. We're going to chew some nails off of our fingers. But I think we get through this tie. And if we get through this tie, I think we're going to lift the cup. Is that just being overly optimistic? Like I said, being slightly romantic? I mean, I don't know, but.
Bill, I'm wrestling with it. I'm going to throw it to you, honestly.
I mean, it's definitely – I was just looking up something real quick here, but, I mean, it's definitely some hopeless romantic. There's a little sprinkled in here, but I'm not going to lie to you. I have that as well and want that to be the case. Is Diego Costa back?
He misses the first leg.
He because it's yeah, that's what it's looking like. He's trying to make for the return to the Emirates Stadium. Okay, so he misses the first leg. So, I mean, that helps me feel a little bit better about this. The hopeless romantic in me says that the team's going to come together, even with Uba not being able to play. They're going to come together, probably concede some crappy goals, but I hope that they're showing like they can score four or five. So. I'm hoping in some way they can just keep Atletico to at least one or two and be able to nick four. It's going to be a tough tie. I have to say that I think Arsenal are going to go through because it's what I want, and I think it's what Arsene Wenger deserves at the very least.
I wish I shared your optimism, guys. I really do.
It's dude, they're tough. Atleti's tough.
I think it's more wishful thinking than optimism. Yes. But.
Here's the problem. I don't think the matchups work in our favor, just on the field. I think Mkhitaryan being out is a huge blow because he can be that secondary creator that Iwobi is just not. And Wilshere either. He's just not a secondary creator. So you probably see Welbeck slide in there. So I have this awful feeling that Wilshere is going to start. And quite frankly, against this type of team that presses you so well in midfield, that creates turnovers and then immediately hits you on the counter with Griezmann, I think that could be really bad because Wilshere has shown a tendency in the last few weeks that he's played to really dwell on the ball, lose it, and then he doesn't have the recovery pace to get back.
Sounds like Xhaka too.
But Xhaka, to his credit, I think the past 2 months has been our best player. I think he's been really good the past few months.
He has been. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. But he does still struggle with high pressure.
Yeah, but I think with Wilshere, though, he also has the problem is he loses it and then he'll lunge in to get it back. And I think he gets riled up. And Atletico is a team that can really get under your skin. And I think I worry about him. I don't know how else you line up. I mean, I know Bill might not want to hear this, but I'd almost rather play Iwobi over Wilshere, but that won't happen. I think the
put him on the left wing.
Put him on the left, put Welbeck on the right. You know, honestly, that might work. But I would like – I mean, if Arsenal are going to have any chance, they can only give up one away goal. If we win like 3-2, I don't think we win the second – I don't think we win the second leg with an – I mean, or I don't think we – go through. I think if you win the first leg, 2-0 would be an ideal result. I don't know how that'll happen, but if you win the first leg 2-0, then you all of a sudden Atletico have to score three goals at home. They are not really used to having to dictate the tempo. So I think then you can kind of hit them on the break and you have a chance. So, the Costa being out does help. I think Juan Fran, the right back, is also out for both legs, which is, it's a good thing for us. Elneny being out, I think, is a real blow, actually. I think he's someone who kind of keeps it tight in midfield, recycles possession, moves the ball around. I'm going to say that Arsenal win the first leg 2-1, and then Atletico win the second leg 1-0, and that puts them through. On away goals. So I think it'll be really close because this is not as good an Atletico team as previous seasons. I think the stadium is really going to be rocking on Thursday, though. I'm excited to see that. I'll have to record it because I'm going to see Avengers that day. Oh, nice. So they didn't time this well for my schedule. But I think that's how I see it unfolding. But like you guys, the hopeless romantic with me would just love to see Arsene Wenger go out on top. I mean, I think he deserves that much. And I think he can then leave with a little bit more peace, thinking, hey, I got the club back into the Champions League. I've set it up perfectly for the next guy to come in.
Yeah. And like you said, the timing of the announcement is really going to bring the team together. It's going to bring the fans together. So that's probably going to be one of the best environments for an Arsenal home game that the club has had in a very, very long time, probably since we moved into the Emirates. I would be willing to bet that that stadium is louder than it's ever been before for this game. And that can play a huge role. So, I mean, obviously we're going to have to wait and find out. It's going to be tough, but it'll be cool. Either way, Arsene Wenger is going to get the send-off he deserves, whether he goes out on top with a trophy or not. The fans, the players, everybody's going to make it the kind of send-off that, he deserves. Because without him steering the club for the last 22 years, Arsenal Football Club would not be what it is today. And that's one of the top 10 clubs in the world, not necessarily in terms of money and what they can spend, but in terms of reputation, image, you know, use the word biggest. It's one of the 10 biggest clubs in the world, because that kind of encompasses everything. Like I said, reputation and the club's in that position because of Arsene Wenger. You know, we touched on his legacy, but that's really his legacy. It's that Arsenal is that type of club. It's seen on the world's on the world scene as, you know, at that level. So he's going to get a send off, and he's always going to be remembered for everything that he did. So we're going to wrap this up. Any final words, Alex? What do you got, bud?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. He made Arsenal a brand, and people talk about George Graham and Herbert Chapman and all the managers in the past. You know, they did great things as well, but he really put Arsenal on the international map, where you walk around and you see people all over the world wearing Arsenal shirts. And that is really a credit to what he's done. All the former players who've come out and supported him since his announcement, I think, shows how loved he was. Guys like Alex Ferguson saying he was like his greatest rival. We'll never see another like him. I'm sorry that it had to end this way. But I hope that the club really makes it special for him. But Bill, what about you?
I'm very upset. You know, watching that Champions League final back in 2006, was actually able to watch it. Upset that didn't win it. I will always feel referees have more to play in things than maybe more other people think. And Arsene was hard done by, I believe, in a couple of these games. So I really do hope he wins the Europa League. As AJ said, get him in a good place for the Champions League for next season. Got some good signings this year, made some moves, and left the club in a very, very good position. I mean, to be able to do this as a self-sustaining model, using the old stadium as a resource to build apartments and places to live and green spaces, just the type of thinking and how much he gets mocked for his coaching and how he's been the past couple years, I really hope he's celebrated. I hope he's celebrated for the rest of the year, and I hope he's celebrated after that fact. That's my hope.
Quick thing. I want Champions League predictions just for the two semifinals. Who's going through to the final, guys?
Anybody but Liverpool.
Yeah, right. I don't want to see that happen. I'm with you there, man.
I can't handle it, man. If they were to go through and win that thing, I don't even know what I'd be able to do.
We'd never hear the end of it.
No, never. It would be 2005 relived, and that's too much for me. So anybody but Liverpool. I don't really think Roma have the juice to beat them. I think they, pardon the language here, blew their wad on beating Barca. But I have hope. I'm hoping that they do. I would have liked to see the other semifinal as the actual final, though. But – I was just going to finish off and say, I'm thinking it's going to probably, and I can't even believe I'm going to say this, I think it's going to be Madrid versus Liverpool, and I'm hoping Madrid just takes it because it's what they always do.
Yep. Yeah. I'm with you there.
I have the sneaking suspicion Roma might actually pull this out because no one expects them to. I got to say, they really, for as much as that Barcelona tie came down to just, I think it was away goals, they were the better team over those two legs. It wasn't a fluke to me. So, you know, Liverpool's got the transition attack, but I think Roma might go through. I don't know why everyone is counting out Bayern Munich, honestly, especially with Heinkes there. I do think Real Madrid, though, turn it up in the Champions League. So I'm going to go Real Madrid-Roma in the final. And we'll make a prediction on that once it comes around. But and after Arsenal, hopefully go through to the Europa League final as well. So, yep.
All right. Hey, it's been another podcast. First one in a few months. I think we did all right, boys?
Yes, sir.
A little bit of rest I felt at the beginning from myself, but I got back into it.
Started losing the voice about halfway through. So, yeah, we'd like to thank you guys for sticking with us, tuning back in. We'll see. We're going to try and get some more out there. Obviously, life's kind of getting this adulting thing is getting to all three of us right now. And I see Bill yawning over there. It's about an hour past my bedtime right now. It's getting late and it's only 10 o'clock, man. They used to just be waking up from a nap, getting ready to go.
Yeah. Me too, man. Not too long ago either.
No, not really. It goes downhill really, really fast. But yeah, again, I just wanted to say thanks for tuning in and we'll talk to you next time.
See you guys.
See ya.